Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Music and Spinner.com, where you can get free MP3s, exclusive interviews, and more. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 215 for October 5th, 2009. Who needs this crap? This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2 and follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by GoToMeeting, the affordable way to meet with clients and colleagues. For your free 30-day trial, visit gotomeeting.com/twit. It's time for TWiT, This Week in Tech, the show that covers all the things that have happened in the week of tech. Well, not all of them. In fact, really not even a large portion. In fact, frankly, we just cover whatever we the hell want to cover. And despite the administrations of Mr. John C. Dvorak, who tries to keep us moving, tries to keep us covering tech. What is that?
Is that your house?
John's showing us a picture of his shed.
It's my new house.
What are you, a gold miner?
My 401k.
That's all that's left. ChannelDvorak.com if you want to find out. Are you going to blog that? Why do you have a snapshot of a shanty?
I took this somewhere in Wyoming.
It's a great picture. It looks like a ghost town.
Actually, I sent you the Photoshop version. It's quite nice. I'm using it as a background for a new thing I'm doing for Mevio called the Tech Grouch.
Do you sit on the porch on a rocking chair with a shotgun?
I got a beard. I got the
I'm John C. Dvorak, the Tech Grouch.
No, I'm not John C. Dvorak. This is somebody else.
Aren't you tired of being the cranky, grouchy guy? Don't you want to be like
you?
Yeah, like me, Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah, I do. I've always wanted to be like you, Leo.
Also here, Will Harris from channelflip.com. Hi, Will. How are you today?
Hello. I'm very well, thank you. I've got my glass of port, and I'm very happy.
Oh, that looks good.
A little late in the evening for a port.
Nice, isn't it? Yeah. A little tawny 10-year.
10-year tawny port. It's like show and tell on TWiT today. And we were supposed to have Frank Barnico on the line, and this happens all the time. It's, people are about to appear on the show, and then their internet goes out. Do you think it's a conspiracy of some kind?
They're out to
it's
get you,
stress.
Leo.
Maybe like they never use Skype, and then as soon as they start using a lot of bandwidth.
Yeah, the whole internet just goes
kablooey. Yeah. It's too bad because Frank wrote a blog post that I thought was very interesting, why bloggers and podcasters should be happy about the idea that Comcast might be buying 51% of NBC Universal.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, you know, my experience not getting bumped from the show has been that I watched the live.twit.tv and you're talking about me and nobody picks up, I don't know what happens. But he's probably listening right now, and he probably will get back onto the show within the next 15 minutes.
What do you think, first of all, that this rumor, which in fact Comcast is, well, maybe it's one of those non-denial denials, but it seems like they've denied it.
No, it's a total non-denial denial.
You think
that the first story that aired was that Comcast was buying NBC Universal 100%.
Ah, yeah.
And the non-denial denial was, that story is not accurate.
It's right.
Like, yes, there's a difference between not accurate and not true.
So you think it's true? They're going to have a controlling interest.
I think it's true, too.
Is this, you know, I mean, my first thought is that this is a way Comcast can keep companies like, they can't buy everybody, but NBC's been very, very active, first with Hulu and then with their own site and putting shows online. Companies like Comcast hate that because it means people can watch those shows using cheap internet access instead of expensive premium cable access.
Yeah, but they're using the internet, the so-called cheap internet access is actually expensive Comcast internet access,
well,
generally.
But you
need to get some bandwidth if you want to watch TV on your through the internet.
Yeah, but Comcast, what do they get for internet access? $50. But your cable bill is, I bet you, well over $100 because of all the, you know, premium stuff that they want you to
use a satellite dish.
Ah, how much is your satellite?
I think they're $50, something like that.
Yeah. I just, my sense is, and maybe I'm wrong, that the cable companies hate the idea of people just using their bandwidth.
Yeah, but they're not idiots. They know it's a done deal. Yeah,
I guess it is a done deal, isn't it? Nothing.
Yeah, so they got to take defensive measures, and like I think this is a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess if you feel like the entire world is migrating from cable to IPTV, as a cable company, you kind of feel like you need a stake in TV.
Yeah, you and I, Will, are doing IPTV plays basically. So I love the idea. I think the thing that gives us a little bit of a leg up is that, and this is always true when businesses change dramatically like this, that the old line business can't afford to cannibalize.
Yeah,
their business, and so
it's a massive opportunity, because for smaller players coming into the market, there's no opportunity cost,
right?
Everything is upside. Whereas if you're an incumbent, then there's a lot of downside to go with a potential amount of upside. And there's a lot of people right now talking about whether it's the New York Times or all the recent paywalls, etc. Is the internet going to make up for the shortfall in traditional revenue streams? Whereas the question for people like you is, well, I don't have a traditional revenue stream to protect. The internet's right. Just all money. It's all money all the time.
I want to apologize because, I gave a speech on Friday. I thought it was just, a small group of people. And there were, a lot of them were young people or people who were kind of trying to figure out how they can make this move to the internet. And so I wanted to reassure them. I was talking a little bit about Tech TV and how it failed because advertisers really didn't have faith in broadcasting intended for intelligent audiences. Advertisers thought, intelligent people aren't going to watch the ads. They're just going to decide what to buy because they're intelligent. We can't influence them. And I wanted to make the point to these young people and these people in transition that, in fact, you could do a smart network. Twit's been nothing but aimed at intelligent people. And make a living. So I told them what our revenue situation. And of course, that became a big story all over the internet, as if, like I'm rolling in dough or something.
You are. Sounds like it to me.
Well, there's costs. There's taxes. It's not, I didn't write myself a $1 million check last month.
Actually, yeah. Leo, it's really, really funny because I did I did a talk at TechCrunch event in London a couple of weeks ago, in which I mentioned that it was really, really hard to get a sense of the new media world in Britain because nobody really talked about money. It was a very British thing about, nobody likes to talk about money. Hello, nobody likes to mention money. And
We hear you, Frank. Hang on.
Okay. And I mentioned that in America, talking about money is a much more open thing and everybody tries to help each other and everybody tries to be free with information in the spirit of entrepreneurship. And of course, this thing came out a week later and I was like,
see,
yeah, I think that proves the point.
See,
by the way, what reminds me of? It reminds me of, I was talking to somebody from England the other day and they were buying a house around here. And I said, so what'd you pay for it? Oh, by the way, in California, I told them, in California, we tell people what we pay for our houses and what we sold them for. This is what we do.
That's right. We have no shame or pride. I know it's gauche to talk about money, and I wouldn't walk up to somebody.
It's gauche in an old sense, but that old sense is a structured management style that was designed to keep people from actually knowing what other people made.
That's true.
So you could screw them.
That's really true. And I tell my employees this, don't you dare tell anybody else what you make, because it just causes jealousy and you'll all want more money.
Yeah, so you're management now.
Yeah, management now. Anyway, hey, Frank, we got Frank Barnacco on. I'm sorry, Barnacco on. Thank you, Frank. I really appreciate it. I don't know what happened there. It looked like we lost you.
All it took was a shutdown.
Yeah, restarting always helps. So
I'm kind of laughing because my father-in-law is a Windows guy and I'm always tweaking him.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping he's not watching.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a Mac. You were using Windows 7, right, Frank?
Yeah. Too late.
Yeah. Frank, you've been on Twit before, but not for a long, long time.
Right. A long time ago. Yep.
It's about time we got you back. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it was back when there was, I think there was only one show. And now look at you.
Really? Is that true?
Now look.
Wow. That's kind of amazing.
There may have been Mac Drake.
Yeah.
Ages, I thought Twit was first.
Ages ago.
So let's get to that article that Frank wrote.
I'm glad we got you on because we really wanted to talk about this NBC Comcast deal, which in your absence we've concluded is in fact a real deal despite Comcast's non-denial denial. You agree, Frank, that this is probably what's going to happen?
Well, I think that Comcast certainly wants to do it. They tried to do Disney for, what, X number of billion dollars a few years ago.
Oh, who hasn't tried to do Disney?
The Comcast people clearly want to have content. And as I put on the blog and as I was thinking about it, you know, all these folks, and, you know, I didn't say you, Leo, but clearly you're the archetype out there. You're the model. And I think that Comcast is going to want to have more content available to sell to its subscribers and to other subscribers. And the best way to generate more dollars is to have content that can't be gotten anyplace else. And I think podcasters and blogcasters have a real opportunity here that Comcast will look for more and more content. And God knows the internet is producing it right and left in those niches that each of us cares about, although they are different niches. And they add up to a big audience.
You don't think it's a defensive move from Comcast that they're just saying, boy, we're going to get eaten alive? Because really, Comcast's business is purely a delivery mechanism. Although they did have Liberty Media, they have in the past toyed with content creation. In fact, they spun it out. I think that it seems they're a little schizo. They can't decide if they want to be in content creation or just distribution. But it seems to me now that it's clear that distribution is not where the money's going to be. It's going to be creating content, yes?
I believe that's true. And as a content creator, I and you both know that distribution is critical to the it's the lifeblood of anybody who's making content. And Comcast has that's big
true.
Pipe.
They do.
And they avoid ending up being just a pipe if they have extra special content. I'm thinking about the Roku box and how Netflix is putting itself into various places. So it is a content option, and I think Comcast is clearly thinking down the road. Yes, they want to have as many subscribers as they can. They're something like 22 million now, and I just think the more content they got, the more subscribers they're going to have, and the more content they've got that they can sell, that should make podcasters a little bit of dollars.
I'd like to see that. Will, you were going to say something? I mean, you're in this too.
I have to say, I think in the long run, the money is not actually in content. It's actually in distribution.
Really?
Aggregation.
Oh, an aggregation.
Yeah,
like what Channel Flip does as an aggregator.
I think content, you know, what we're seeing is an explosion of content, as you know, as you've talked about. Content has never been there's never been more content, and content's never been cheaper or easier to produce. And that leads to a proliferation, and that leads to a devaluation in the marketplace. You're already seeing, you know, the number of TV commissions go down, the budgets for TV commissions go down, and that's going to keep going down and keep going down and keep going down. I think, when you look at what where value is in this kind of new economy, you have to look at what's scarce, because, you know, we're looking at proliferation creates scarcity, right? The irony, the proliferation of media online and the massive amounts of media online creates a scarcity in terms of large audiences. Because everybody's watching lots of different things, which means the audience for each thing is smaller. So actually the value in this kind of new economy is in the aggregation of large audiences, not in the production of content, which is kind of becomes a thing of little value above its production.
It's fungible. It's not. It's a commodity. John, you agree?
Yes.
I mean, you work for Mevio.
Yeah, well,
and they're the first podcast aggregator ever.
Yeah, and they keep and the model has changed. I said since I got there a couple of years ago, I would say that the model has changed 6-7 times. No, seriously, but I mean not for the worst. I mean every time they look at the model and they say, well, you know what we should do is this, and what we should do is this, and what we should do is this, and they keep changing.
You got to be nimble in this world because
nobody knows what the end model is because everybody's experimenting. I mean, you have an operation that is
we're making it up as we go along.
It's a one man show that is extreme. You know that could go on forever and may have to change. It may not, or maybe someone would just buy you. The folks at Mevio now, they have so much aggregation going on, and they're doing these split deals with all these different producers. Some people are making quite a bit of money, not your kind of money, but they're making a lot of money.
They said, in fact, I think Adam Curry said that he had three podcasts making $500,000 to $1 million a year.
I know of a couple making over 200,000. I don't look at those numbers, but I know at least two that make over 200,000. I think Callie Lewis makes
I'm
a
sure
quarter
Callie
of a
must
million.
Make that much, yeah.
I think she makes a quarter
but
of a million dollars.
That's I don't know if that's the money to her, and I don't know if Adam's
quoting. No, this would be the money to her.
Okay, because I think Adam was probably quoting the they split it. So she was quoting the revenue, total revenue, and then the amount of money to her is half that. But and she only does a few shows.
And she's not the big money winner. There's two other shows that I've never even heard of that
are bigger.
Yeah, but they're not about tech. They're like, I don't know what they're about.
That's interesting. See, I kind of with you.
Will and
go ahead, Frank.
I think Will and John are making the same point I was writing about and thinking about. Comcast is not going to want to have onesie-twosie podcasts and video shows on a long menu. It is just as you've done with the Twit Network. It's a 24/7 wheel of tech content. You give me a 24/7 wheel of digital photography content, and I'm going to watch that. I'm going to pay $3 or $4 a month for that channel. So the person who puts together, as you've done, the kind of niche programming into a format that is easily handled by a cable company, the distributions know, they don't have to worry about whether all the lines are working, whether the shows have arrived on time. But they, in effect, they do just become the distribution. They become the marketer. They make a piece selling it to subscribers. And that aggregator who's put it all together, that's the one that has the rate of opportunity.
Now, here's my... I'm going to throw a monkey wrench in this. Go ahead, John.
Throw the monkey wrench in it. I have a plug. David Spark wrote a really good column about making money as a podcaster that I want to plug. But
yeah, he left me out of that. I felt a little hurt, to be honest.
Did he? Oh, you saw the article?
Yeah, it was a very good article, and that's where I got that 500,000 to a million figure from.
Oh, well, you know, I think it was he was remiss to leave you out. But
that's because you know why he left me out. He's asked me many times to be on Twit, and I don't have. He's a PR guy. I don't put PR guys on Twit.
All right, yeah, he probably left you out on purpose. He snubbed you.
I'm snubbed. You know how easy I am to offend.
Screw you, Spark.
David's very funny, great comic, old friend. Worked together at Tech TV, and I'm sure.
Well, anyway,
just
he has these the nine models are, and they're the most accurate models I've ever seen put in one article.
No, it's an excellent article, and I highly recommend it. Is that on his blog? Where does that get posted?
It's on Social Mash or Mashups or some Mashamania or some. I don't know what it is, but look up David Spark podcasting, and you'll probably find it.
Yeah, I thought that was an excellent article. So here's my monkey wrench. I've been reading Accidental Billionaires, which is the Ben Mezrich book that's going to be a movie any minute now, with Justin Timberlake playing Mark Zuckerberg. It's on the story, I think, highly fictionalized story of the founding of Facebook. But it did kind of, a light came on for me, and I'm sorry if I'm slow to this party, but it's very obvious to me that going forward, advertisers are no longer going to be satisfied with scattershot advertising, the kind they get even on this show a little bit. They're going to want to know more and more about the people they advertise to. And this is what Google and Facebook offer them. They can say, I want the five biggest dentists in Muncie. I want the one person who's going to buy a big screen TV in Petaluma, California. They can be very, very specific, which makes their ads incredibly more efficient. And I think platforms like Facebook and Google are going to be a problem for even internet broadcasters because we just can't get that granular. What do you think?
Well, I think we lost Frank for one thing, but
we'll get him back.
I have this is the holy grail of advertisers.
Exactly. That's what they want.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not achievable. I think it's a wishful thinking situation. That's why you have to do advertising in the first place.
Well, don't Facebook and Google give them exactly that?
Facebook and Google give you that kind of granularity, and they do give you that kind of access. But what they don't give you, either yet or conceivably at all, is any kind of nice way of exploiting that. I mean, advertising as a culture, as an industry, is about touchy-feely kind of, reaching into your emotions and motivating you to do stuff.
No, this is where you're wrong. That's old school advertising. That's, you know, there's coercive advertising.
Oh, here we go.
I think the advertising model is moving away from coercion and tricks and is moving towards influence. The most successful.
It's about creativity.
No. Advertising, starting at the turn of the last century, when Freud's theories were used to create the business of advertising and PR, they went from being, you know, if you look at a Sears catalog, advertising used to be a list of features and benefits, and that's it. And then along came, what's his name? The father of PR, Freud's cousin, who said, wait a minute. What? Say again?
I can't think of the guy's name.
Oh, I can't remember.
Freud.
I thought Hill and Knowlton invented the whole thing.
No. This guy, actually Hitler used his theories very effectively. This guy said, no. What you want to do is tap into Freudian wants and needs. You want to create a need for a product. You want to make people think they've got bad breath or BO, and that fear, that terror will make them buy. And for almost a century, that's what advertising's been. It's been to trick people into buying a product by coercion, by misrepresentation, by fear.
I remember the commercial, don't broadcast B.O.
Exactly. You know, remember
they honked that horn, B.O.
Yeah, B.O. Yeah. That actually haunted me in high school because B.O. happens to rhyme with Leo. And
they called you B.O. Leo?
They said, Leo has B.O. So thank you, Hill and
Knowlton. I thought your real pronunciation of your name, though, was Leo.
It was, but they didn't care. They, you know, middle school has no boundaries, no respect.
Now I get it.
I have to have a moment here. All right. So I hate advertising like that. And so, but I truly believe that one of the reasons we succeed and podcasts succeed is because we don't use coercion or tricks or duplicity. What we do is we use influence, which is, I think, a much more powerful way to reach people. It's word of mouth. It's having somebody, it's believe it or not, getting kind of back to that original features and benefits thing. That's the kind of ads we do. We trust our audience to be intelligent. We explain to them why this is a product they might want to try. And I think that that's going to be, in the long run, more effective, especially when you combine that with much more targeted advertising. So I don't know if I'm with you, Will. I don't know if it's about emotion anymore. I think it's changing.
Well, I think you know, you're possibly right. I think that it's really hard to say that advertising is. I think there's two trends in internet advertising. There's what you're saying, the kind of influencers and the kind of features benefits. And then there's this kind of statistical kind of spreadsheet based advertising, which is, you know, if you pay X amount of dollars for a banner on the side of a web page, it'll be viewed X number of times, which will generate an X number of people clicking through, which will generate X percentage of leads, or which will generate X percentage of acquisitions. Well, it does, but it's kind of soul destroying, isn't it? And it all, you know, and I think the inevitable move from that is towards, you know, purely, advertising where you're purely getting paid based on acquisitions rather than
we don't do that and you're right, that is an acknowledgement,
and that's
that there
a real problem because the way the spreadsheet driven internet advertising industry works is moving inexorably towards a model where producers, publishers are only paid when a customer customer of theirs does something.
That doesn't acknowledge, and in a way it is kind of a counter argument to what I'm saying, that doesn't acknowledge the branding and the imaging that comes from advertising.
And the image that comes with it, right? Yeah. And so what I'm saying is that the brand and the image that comes with it is inevitably always going to be here. And that's why we're not going to ever move to a purely kind of statistical Facebook's likes and dislikes. It's also about the power of brand, the power of image, the power of emotion in advertising. So
just talk to Steve Jobs.
Yeah,
he uses emotion,
awesome.
Doesn't he? Very
brilliant.
Effectively.
Wonderful.
Very effectively.
Awesome. Really, really great. You're awesome.
Right. Yeah, isn't that a funny video? Isn't that a funny video?
Oh,
David
amazing.
Sparks' article, by the way, was on Mashable, and it is from October 1st. And it is a good article that talks about the 9 models for revenue, including subscription, donations, and aggregation, which is kind of what we do. We do kind of mini aggregation. My theory being that if you're looking for a certain style and quality, that you would come to us because you know that's what you're going to get. See, I think Mevio doesn't do that because it aggregates so many podcasts. You can't do that.
It's not a single channel. They also don't do what you do, which is to have, you actually have more, you're more like an international TV station.
Right.
Because you have
exactly.
A thing
it's much
on.
More like a station. You're exactly right.
And you run it like a station. You're like the station manager. You're mean to your employees.
Yep.
You know, and you have the kind of the typical station manager. You know, I think you've had a couple operations. You've hit yourself in the head a few times, so you lower your IQ.
I keep the cocaine in the lower left and the bourbon in the lower right drawer.
But the joke is, you do have the bourbon there. I don't know where you keep the other stuff, but show them. There you go.
I got two kinds of bourbon. I got your single barrel. Evan Williams. I like this bourbon because it's named after the founder of Twitter. I don't.
You know what's interesting about that bourbon is not it's rather inexpensive.
Really?
Yeah, it's like $20. It's an outstanding product.
You know, because Kirk Harnack gave me this. I thought it was kind of fancy.
Well, you know, I guess the great
smooth.
Thing about being your own station manager is that you can hide your own boots, right?
I hide my own boots. Frank, we got you back. What's going on, Frank? Is Comcast mad at you for that article?
No, I haven't heard a word from them. No, I guess I'm happy I have Cox.
Oh, you have Cox. Cox is mad at you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't attest for Cox's internet connectivity today. Yeah.
Nothing Leo, worse than angry Cox.
Doesn't seem too good.
In the comments you were making at ONA, and you talked about this Sparks piece.
Mm-hmm.
How's begging doing these days?
Not so good.
Is begging hearing? There was one suggestion. One of his nine models was put a PayPal button on the website. Does that still work?
We do it. And it was my plan that would be how we'd fund the network. I really didn't want to take advertising, but it just isn't. Not enough people contribute. And I'm not. I have too much pride to do the public television begging that is required.
Adam and I do that on our No Agenda show.
Are you doing it? How effective is that?
It's actually better than you'd think. It's still not. It hasn't turned the corner, but we haven't turned up. I mean, I used to do public radio a lot, and so I'm used to this model, and as opposed to just commercial radio. And I think it works, and I think, but you do have to. But you do have to do what you have to look at the experts, and the experts are the people that do public TV and public radio.
And, you know, that's
and
so
they
annoying.
Get into massive begging gimmicks, giveaways.
I can't do that.
Yeah,
I can't do that. I just don't want to do that. And frankly, I was hoping that it would be cleaner to do donations. And certainly, we do have donations. We do about $10,000 a month in donations. That pays for the rent. That pays for servers. It does kind of. I kind of dedicate it towards the fixed costs. Except that salaries now have way outpaced that. So, but for a long time, that's how we ran it. I now consider it. It's certainly an important part. They're the equivalent of an advertiser, but it's also, I consider it a buy-in. And I think that's one thing you got to really think about is creating allegiance with your audience, creating a community and a buy-in from your audience, and giving them a way to buy in for $2 a month is more than just for financing. It really is boy, that bourbon's coming right to my head. I think I'll have another.
Can you use a glass,
is
please?
Like show? You're on the bourbon and I'm on the port.
Sorry. Let's move on. Are y'all excited about Windows 7? Okay. I am having a house party.
Well, signed up for that and they never sent me. I got refused, I guess.
How could they refuse John C. Dvorak?
I never got anything.
Are those videos real or are they fake?
Those
are
not
viable?
Fake. You've seen on my blog, and you've seen elsewhere, the Windows House Party videos. That comes from houseparty.com, which is
And they're not like viral marketing or anything.
Oh, far from it. They may make you sick.
Well, tell us why.
Because I showed that to everyone in my office, and they went, it's viral marketing.
No, it's serious.
There's no
Although
way that,
the funniest one, this funniest one, there is a Windows 7 House Party kind of mashup of this video that all they did was bleep the word activities, and it sounds filthy. You remember the book Memoirs of a Shy Pornographer? Was it?
No. Who wrote that?
It's a classic book, and the guy becomes a pornographer by taking his novel, which he could never publish, and just blanking out random nouns. And the human mind is so filthy that if you blank out random nouns, it turns into porno. It's quite a funny book. Highly recommended. Memoirs of a Shy Boy.
Can you play us a bit of the video?
Yeah, let me put. Do you want me to play the censored one? It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find. Adland.tv has it. And you can. So the premise is there's actually a company called HouseParty.com that does house parties for businesses, and so Microsoft went to them and contracted with them, and they had a process. I got selected. You get a copy of Windows 7 autographed by Steve Ballmer.
Autographed by Ballmer?
Yeah.
Hey.
Did you get your copy yet?
To the party.
It's coming Monday.
You know what? Let's take a minute or so to tell you about how great it is to...
Well, now, the four of us got to have our parties a little ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, try everything out. So we thought we'd be able to tell you some of the tips that help make our parties really fun. Right.
Yeah. Now, of course, the first thing you want to do is... Yeah, make sure you do that a couple days in advance of the party. You got to play with... before the party.
Second, look at the activities you and your guests can try at your party and choose the ones that seem to you to be the most fun.
There's a video of each activity from one of our parties, and we have tried them all, right?
You just look at them all and decide which one seems to be the most fun for your guests.
Right.
And some of the host notes, they list bonus...
You get the idea. Gag. It's a great gag. It works very well. So, you know, we're having the party October 22nd. They send you streamers, napkins, balloons, a copy of Windows 7, some suggested activities. It's hokey, but I know a lot of people who are having these parties, all of them tongue-in-cheek. However, they're still having the parties, right?
Right, right. It's hokey, and you must think that Microsoft expected to get criticism and comments, and people would say, what the heck is this thing? But nonetheless, as you say, there are parties and people are talking about Windows 7, and the word of mouth is important.
It's working. It's working. Actually, I'm excited. I like Windows 7. I know that's kind of so uncool to say you like Windows, but I really like Windows 7. And I think it's going to be a...
You liked Vista, too, when it first came out.
I did. And I was wrong about that. My like turned to hate very quickly. In fact, John, you've said, are you still saying this, that... by the time 7 comes out, it's going to be as bad as anything else?
Yeah. It'll be clogged up and slow. I mean, it'll have the same issues. But as bad or as good as anything else, because I don't think Vista's that bad.
Yeah, but it isn't now. It had some big compatibility issues.
Well, there's going to be some with the Windows 7. Yeah. Obviously, the XP compatibility mode is going to have to be downloaded for people who want to use XP. Program, certain ones anyway, and so the download's supposed to be available on the 22nd. It's not going to be on the disk. I guess whatever's on the disk.
If you buy
work.
A new computer, you'll get it. I'm waiting. Actually, there's a new Dell that I really like. The Dell Z Latitude Z is a very thin kind of their MacBook Air, and it just came out, and I'm looking forward to getting it. But I'm waiting because I want to get Windows 7 on it. All right, it's been a while since there's been a tech IPO. There is a tech IPO. We're going to talk about that in just a second. Our guests, once again, John C. Dvorak from channeldvorak.com, and of course, Cranky Geeks, Angry Geeks, pissed off tech people. I don't know. What is it? What is the new one?
Stuff like that. The Tech Grouch.
The Tech Grouch. But you're not going to be the...
Go to techgrouch.mevio.com to get a sample.
But you're not going to be the Tech Grouch.
I am the Tech Grouch.
Oh, but it's going
to
be
But I'm not really, if you know what I mean. I have to... It's a...
Oh, this sounds good. Why? But aren't you worried that you're getting typecast?
This is not... No, because this is a different character.
Is this the first time you've played a character?
No, I don't know. I'm not sure that that's true.
Old Grouch meets technology.
Hey, I understand they're bringing out a PS3 Slim. Who needs it? I understand they're going to bring out a small Wii, and it's going to be called the Wii Wii. Beatles, Rock Band, who the heck needs...
What are you? Are you like the guy from ZZ Top? What is that beard?
That's the... If you let the thing play, I have that joke in there.
What's this crap? Hey, you kids, go learn to play the guitar like I did. You've seen ZZ Top, haven't you? Go to squarespace.com, use the code word tech for a 12% discount.
Hey, you even got an ad in there. Is that going to be how long it is? 30 seconds like that?
Yeah, 30 seconds.
That's pretty funny. Is the idea to go viral? Is that the plan?
Well, I mean, the idea is to get someone to watch.
He's wearing a plaid Hunter's shirt, a plaid Hunter's cap.
That and, cap, by the way, is the same cap that Carson used to use when he played that rube.
That's right. I remember that. And
yeah, my wife got me that cap. I'm sorry?
Where'd you get the ZZ Top beard?
I got it from the local party store.
And there's the shed behind you. That's the shed.
Well, no, that's a different shed.
It looks the same. How can you tell the difference?
It's a shed. I mean,
Shed's a shed. Oh, my
I think
goodness.
This is my future here.
This is the fun. Actually, I really like it. And it's you. It's clearly you. I mean, it's your voice.
No, it just looks like me.
He's even wearing. You didn't even take the glasses off. If you took off the glasses, we wouldn't know.
Yeah.
You'd look like Mr. Potato Head, but now it's
those
pretty
are
obvious.
Giant glasses, though, from the 70s.
Oh, they're special glasses?
They're big, giant monster glasses.
Are they the ones you wore on Computer Chronicles when you demonstrated the
PS2?
PS2?
I found them. That's what gave me the idea to do the character. Yeah.
We'll be back.
I'm bored. What can I say?
No, you need something to do. It's good you've got a hobby. That's I'm just glad. It could have been woodworking. But no, it's the, what is it? The techgrouch.mevio.com.
Yeah.
I like it. All right. You get your choice. We were thinking, you know, I was very jealous. Dig has this thing where you can thumbs up and thumbs down ads. And I think it's brilliant. At first I thought, what advertiser is going to allow people to dig or block ads? And then somebody explained it to me because I'm not so bright. And somebody said, no, this is good because the advertiser knows that that ad will only be seen by somebody who wants to see it. They don't pay for the ones that don't want to see it. And I just can't figure out any way to do that with our ads. So you're just going to have to listen. I'm sorry.
That was a long intro for what?
Go to meeting.com. There's no reason you'd thumbs down this. This is going to change your life. Go to meeting. Is the online meeting service that saves you money. Now, you might say, well, how can a $49 a month service save me money? Well, have you checked out the cost of business meetings lately? My goodness, $1,000, according to American Express, the average cost of a business trip when you add up, you know, the airplane, airfare, the hotel, the taxi, the Kobe beef, it can get expensive. That's why I do as much meeting. I'm not going to do this for Dubai. I want to go to Dubai. And boy, talk about an expensive trip. I'm not paying for it, but boy, it's an expensive trip. Thank you to TEDx for flying me out to Dubai. That's $1,000. That wouldn't even buy you like a little bonbon on Emirates. With GoToMeeting, you have all the meetings you want. $49 a month. You have free voice over IP. You have free phone conferencing. And people are, it's more engaging, I think, than, you know, why do you fly out? You fly out so you can show them the PowerPoint, right? Hey, you show them the PowerPoint on GoToMeeting. They can engage with it. They can edit it. They can modify it. They can say, well, what about this? They can search. You can collaborate. You can train. GoToMeeting is an amazing service from the folks at Citrix. So you know it's good. It's secure. It's easy to use. And did I say $49 a month? How about free for the next 30 days? Go to GoToMeeting.com/twit and you can try it absolutely free. See, this is what I was talking about. We talk features. We talk benefits. We let you try it for free. I'm not trying to trick you. I don't need to. We just let you try it. And you be the judge. GoToMeeting.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. IPO. When is the last tech IPO? I can't even think of the last one. It's been ages. Newegg says they're going to have a public offering. They hope to raise $175 million. I think this is actually something I would consider. Do you have can you buy from Newegg in Britain, Will?
No, unfortunately not. It's the one thing as a tech hobbyist, you know, a modder, you know, as is my roots, I used to read with envy, you know, the Newegg daily deals that would turn up on, you know, on Anand Tech or Hard ACP or all these kind of places, and there'd always be something awesome to buy, and we'd never be able to buy it, and over here it'd always be, you know, 3 months late and twice as expensive.
Yeah.
So I have a little
Newegg's amazing.
A little mini chip on my shoulder about Newegg.
I'll give you an example. Newegg's announced the OEM prices for Windows 7, and it costs $220 for Windows Home Premium. But if you buy the see, they're smart. They sell the OEM version, right? And I think you have to buy some sort of piece of hardware with it to justify that you're building a computer. So you buy it and a stick of RAM, but it's like $99. It's half price.
Nice.
And every geek I know uses Newegg. In fact, I've been trying to get them to advertise. I think they'd be a great advertiser. Maybe they'll have the money now that they've got this IPO. Their revenue last year, $2.2 billion with a B. Isn't that amazing?
It is. I was astounded when I saw that number.
Yeah.
But the margin, they were that big. Razor thin. It's very hard.
Yeah, that's revenue. Okay, that's a good point. That's revenue, not profit.
So they did $2.1 billion in revenue, but they only made
$1.50.
A 1.4% margin.
How much? 1.4%?
1.4% margin.
Huh.
Well, that's tough. Yeah, you're right. That's how
that's the grocery business.
Yeah. Newegg stopped charging New York State sales tax last year. That's a big story. I think that's one of the reasons that these online retailers do so well. And of course, it's very controversial with the states. They don't, you know, you don't pay sales tax. Amazon, same thing. Actually, Amazon will charge New York State sales tax. Newegg will not. So they want to go public. Would you invest? John, is this a surprise? I mean, I thought we'd never see another tech IPO ever again.
Well, the problem with the IPO market is largely due to, Sarbanes-Oxley and the reporting requirements.
Right. We've talked about that. Yeah.
I talked to Tim Draper, as a matter of fact, about this once, and he specifically agreed. Well, he agreed with me and specifically said that it's not worth your while to roll out an IPO unless you're a $400 million company. And of course, obviously, Newegg is in that range. It's just too painful, so nobody wants to do it. So they either
the
do
pain,
it on the
lunch. Pain is the reporting requirements of a public company, according to Sox.
Yeah, and it's apparently the stock number is it kills 4% of your bottom line.
Wow.
Just all the work you have to do.
If they're only making 1.4% margin, this could be bad.
They'll be losing money.
This could be a huge mistake.
Well, I don't know if it's a mistake. Maybe they want to take the money and go somewhere.
Their 1.4% margin results in $28 million in income in 2008.
All right.
Can you do an IPO on $28
million? That's interesting. I don't know.
There's not much money
on
any
amount you want, but it doesn't sound like a good idea. I think until they change some things and make the market more amenable to IPOs, I think the entire economy is going to stay in the doldrums, because the fact of the matter is, if you have companies that are only being built up so they can be bought by Google, you're not going to have any aggressive competition, and it's not going to be very interesting. As opposed to if you have a company that knows it can do an IPO and then maybe take over the world, you're going to have it's a lot more lively. Things right now are dead in the water because of this situation.
Frank, you've been covering this at MarketWatch since 1998. You've seen a lot of IPOs. You saw the frenzy firsthand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We were one ourselves. But I can't imagine buying shares of this IPO, irrespective of the business's dollars right now. When do we expect consumer spending is going to come back? I mean, everything I read says it's going to be it's going to be 2 years before the consumer gets out there to start spending again. So Newegg, I don't know that Newegg's revenues are going to really increase, and revenues are critical in the recovery. Right now, companies are surprising on Wall Street. I think I read today that 75% of the S&P surprised on the upside with their net bottom line, but they did it through cost cutting. And the only way to recover now, they've got to start getting revenue increases. And consumer spending is not something I'd bet on.
So that's interesting, because people have been saying the recession is over. And the stock market's been doing very well. But you're saying they're doing well not on increased sales at all, merely
absolutely
on cost cutting.
That's right. And just look at what happened last Friday when we saw the last month's job numbers. For the first time in 4 months, the number of jobs lost in the economy actually increased. We'd had a three-month gain, and then it just fell off the cliff last month. And companies are still cutting their way to a positive bottom line, but you can't, you can't keep cutting and expect to keep making more money.
Is this I love that, the phrase, is this a dead cat bounce? I just wanted to say dead cat bounce.
Sometimes it's called a dead cow, too.
For people who love cats. I know you love cats, Will.
The best IPO prospect in the tech sector in the next, year or so has got to be Facebook, right?
Oh, but they don't need an IPO. There's the irony. They don't need an IPO.
They do if they want to walk away with a bunch of cash.
Cash in, right?
exit.
Cash in and cash out.
Although, a lot of these guys seem to be cashing in on their investors' money.
Right.
I mean, they keep getting more money, and then the next thing you know, these guys have new cars.
Twitter is now valued at, what was it, a billion?
Yeah.
Facebook, what is its valuation? $40 billion?
Well, the top rate that Microsoft paid was 15, right?
15.
But they've done, I think, an internal
I think it's
round,
gone up.
Like 10.
I think it's like 30, 40, something like that.
Really?
Oh, Facebook's got to be.
Something ridiculous. It's, whatever it is, you go, what?
Is it number a multiple of earnings usually? Frank, is it? How do you figure out what you're worth?
Well, the number is what an investor will pay for it. And so you get that.
Just like houses.
You get that Twitter valuation based upon, I think, somebody invested $100 million
million.
And
That's
they
right.
grossed it up. And they said, well, $100 million and they got X percent of the business. And so it's worth XYZ.
It's a simple calculation. If you buy a business, if you buy 10% of a business for $1 million, then the business is worth $10 million.
So then the real question is, where does the investor come up with her number?
That's right. Yeah.
Will, you're breaking up. You're breaking up.
I think what Will's going to say is that they just basically pull it out of their butt.
Oh, Will.
Fairly plain spoken there.
Will's British. I think he'd probably say derriere or rear or tookus.
Bum.
I'm kind of glad that there's an IPO at all, to be honest with you. It doesn't sound like something I would, now that I know the margins, I would run out
of. Well, I'm not glad
stock.
About it, because the fact of the matter is this thing's going to come out and it's going to have a publicly traded company worth X amount of money, and it's going to, and then the share price is going to drop,
right?
Which is going to discourage further IPOs. Unless you bring out a hot IPO, that's what you have to have. Something comes out at $10 and flies to $150 overnight.
Netscape.
Then everybody gets jacked up.
Well, Microsoft just completed the worst fiscal year in its history. Revenue down 3%, first sales decline ever. All the top executives had their...
Yeah, maybe if they'd advertise in PC Magazine once in a while, it wouldn't be such a problem for them.
You know, this article comes from PC Magazine. It's kind of interesting. No,
Just saying.
Ballmer's pay dropped from $1.34 million to $1.265. Robbie Bach, wow, wait a minute. This doesn't sound right. The CEO made $1.3 million last year. Robbie Bach, who is the president of the Entertainment Devices Division, made $6 million. If I'm Ballmer, I'm pissed.
No, Ballmer doesn't need the money, A. And B, there's probably some sort of bonusing or something going on with Bach's salary. He probably did a really good job of making money for the company.
Yeah, I guess he did. Xbox, and... He made $8
million. Salary plus bonus plus stock options.
Right. This is total compensation numbers. CFO got $3.5 million compared to $4.8 million a year earlier. COO Kevin Turner drops from, he was making $8 million, $8.6 million to $5.4 million. Poor Ballmer. He's like poor kid on
Ballmer's,
the block.
Ballmer's got something else going
feeling
on.
Feeling sorry for him.
He gets $10 per autographed copy of Windows 7 for the Microsoft parties.
I'm going to send him $10. That's what I'm going to do. Maybe Ballmer should have like a PayPal tip jar on the Microsoft site.
Speaking of Microsoft's quarter and the results and Windows 7, do you think that the Windows 7 is going to key off an IT rush? Lots of upgrades. I'm reading something on the web today that says IT managers have been sitting with XP for, let's call it 2001 technology, so they've been sitting with it for almost a decade. Are companies going to really go out there and make the switch now to Windows 7, and is that going to help Microsoft?
It's a great question, and in the past, when a new version of Windows comes out, it's very good for the PC marketplace, and boy, the PC marketplace could really use it right now. They're just struggling. I think this is going to be one of those times where people say, yeah, XP's fine. It still runs. It's still supported. Microsoft hasn't end-of-lifed it. I predict that, in fact, you're not going to see this big buy, and that this is going to be a further bad news in Microsoft's bottom line. What do you think, John?
Well, I've already predicted that it would have a positive impact. I did this some months ago. So I should stick with.
You don't change that?
No, I'm not. You know, I'm not saying it's not going to have the impact of Windows 95 or even Windows 98 or any of the big monster hits that Microsoft has had in the past. Or Windows 2000 was a big. They had a string of hits. Windows 2000, Windows XP. These things all did very well. Then they had Vista, which was their first flop in terms of hits. And then they got this coming out. Everybody seems to like it. Looks pretty cool. I don't think it's going to be a mega hit, but I think it's going to be in line with Windows 98, which is, you know, was a moderate hit. And I think it will help their finances a little bit. And I think they're doing, at least they're trying to do some interesting things with these parties and some other, you know, events and promotions.
Yeah, but I noticed that all the marketing that I've seen is aimed at the consumer, that they're trying to sell the consumer. They want the consumer to buy a new PC. But really, business is what makes or breaks Microsoft, makes or breaks PC makers. And I think business is not swayed by this. I don't think the marketing to business has been compelling at all for Windows 7.
Well, you know, Microsoft sticks with this theory that that if they can pull it through the consumer part of the business, in other words, I am a consumer. I run a business, but I'm also have a computer at home, and I get jacked up on Windows 7, or my neighbors do, or somebody. I see it, I like it, I start using it, and then I give the go ahead to the IT department, go buy it. I mean, I don't think that's a bad process. I mean, how are they going to market directly to businesses anyway nowadays? I mean, through Computer World. I mean, it's a pamphlet. Yeah,
there's no platform anymore.
No, I mean these companies basically screwed the pooch by letting all their conduits for information die, essentially, and now they don't have any way of talking to the businessman. I mean, look at Business Week; it's borderline going out of business itself, and this is the main business publication in the country.
What do you think, Will?
Leo, I think the Wall Street folks are on your side. Right now, the stock Microsoft is selling at 25. It crossed 30 or 31 maybe in the past 6 months, but the stock is just flat. I mean, it's been dead money for 5 years.
It's been a pathetic stock, hasn't it? For a company that is so dominant, that has so many successful products. John and I, we've been talking about this for 4 years. What's wrong with Microsoft stock? Will, what do you think? I want to ask you, because we asked everybody. I'd love to get everybody on record on this. Windows 7, will it be a big boost for the PC industry, or will people just go, I'm sticking with XP, particularly in business?
It's not going to be a huge boost for the PC industry, because I don't believe that at the moment a new operating system is top of people's wish lists. For things in a PC. I think it will have a much better critical and popular reception, because I think people will be getting it on, you know, netbooks and laptops primarily. And I think that, you know, they will like it a lot more than that. I don't think businesses are going to be in a hurry to move to it, because, again, you know, I don't think the businesses right now aren't crying out for a new version of Windows.
I think exactly right. They're happy with XP. And unless Microsoft says we're going to kill XP, and I don't think they can, and by the way, this is no knock on Windows 7. I say it again. I think it's really the best version of Windows probably since ever.
I would agree. It's the best version of Windows that Microsoft have released in the past decade, probably.
Easily. I mean, I think it's as great as the late lamented Windows 2000.
That's how good I think it is.
Windows 2000.
Windows 2000 is still a great product. Still works.
I thought I'd get some laughs out of that. Instead, I get moans of joy and pleasure.
People who agree. That was a tremendous operating system.
It really was. In fact, go ahead, Frank.
I found myself this summer needing to boot up and run Microsoft Money, which they're taking away from me. And don't get me started on that.
They are. They're going out of that business. Yeah.
Yeah, and come on into it. Where is the conversion program? I need that. I need that. But I had a 3-year-old. Hell, the laptop is probably 5 years old. It had Windows 2000 on it, and I booted it up, and it ran fine. Who knows what downloads and updates it took in when I booted it up after being dormant for 3 years. Worked fine.
My mom, I put my mom on Windows 2000. I've moved her to a Mac since, but she was on Windows 2000. But all by herself, without any virus, normally secured Windows 2000, ran flawlessly, perfect. It's still running. It was on a Dell refurb. never got a virus, never got a bug. You know, I mean, it was rock solid.
I have to say the mum move to Mac, I think, is becoming the must-have geek move of 2008, 2009.
It is.
Because I did the exact same thing the end of last year.
And she's using Quicken on the Mac, by the way.
Oh, I used to get a phone call every week, sometimes two a week, from my mother with, this is downloaded. Well, there's a screen that's come up that says, this the right thing? I think I've got this virus. And I went home, I bought her a Mac Mini, I connected it up. I put, Microsoft Word on it so she could, do all the letters, and she uses Hotmail so she can still do all the emails. And I probably had one call in the last 12 months where she couldn't work out something, but no viruses, no spam, no nothing. It's been like, I highly advise anybody whose mother is still on Windows to go and get them a Mac.
You know, you're maligning mothers all over the world. Many moms...
Boneheads.
Yeah, many moms are more sophisticated than we are. Why? I bet you there's moms out there who are writing Haskell code right now for their database on the website. They're about to take over Facebook.
Leo, I just registered mumtomac.com.
Very wise man. Good investment, Frank. You know what I've been using, Frank, in lieu of Quicken or Microsoft Money is Mint. Now, quick, Intuit just bought Mint, but I love Mint. Now, it's not quite the same because you don't really balance your checkbook. You just let the bank tell Mint, and all your financial institutions, Mint, what's going on. But you get this great dashboard.
Yep.
It was always too much Mint trouble for me to understand.
Mint is the one product I wish was available in the UK.
You got Spotify, we got Mint.
Yeah.
I wonder why
Mint would be more helpful, to be honest.
The problem with Microsoft Money, Mint's all well and good, but Microsoft Money has all the investment records, all the portfolio,
right?
The transactions, the holdings, the profits, gains.
Yeah, so come tax
all
time,
that
that's
tax
much
stuff
more.
Yeah. And right now, anybody with Microsoft Money, and there's millions of them. Remember, Microsoft tried to buy Intuit. They really thought that business was going to be something, and they just let it peter away. So now the situation
I don't get Microsoft in some of these things. They're almost like a little kid that loses interest. First, they were all jacked up about buying Intuit and getting into that industry and doing all, becoming another, big player there. I'm worried now that if they had bought Intuit, they'd lose interest and we wouldn't even have Intuit. I mean, these guys are like, now, why would they drop Microsoft Money? Is it losing tons of dough for them, or is it just marginally profitable? I mean, what's the problem?
The only service that Microsoft Money provides, and it's critical to somebody who's got a portfolio, is that updating of stocks on a daily or weekly basis, whatever you want to do. But that's data that is loaded into the program. Well, how much money can that cost to continue to provide that service? Because the software, once done, is done. They haven't updated the software in 2 or 3 years, so it's not a big deal. It's not a project they have to keep managing and moving along and to take care of competition. And now, didn't we just read this week that Microsoft is talking to, is it Bank of America, about doing a mint.com kind of product?
Yeah. You know what I really think is happening at Microsoft, and I don't think that they're wrong in this, is that they realize that desktop software is not there's no future in it. That they see companies like Mint, they see web-based services like that, and that's really being the future. I wouldn't be surprised if Microsoft introduces something similar in its Live family. If I were Yahoo, I mean, Yahoo's got this great finance page. I'd start looking, getting some web developers in there and working on that real quick, because I think that that's where Mint really underscored for me the value of just letting the software take care of it all.
Well, of course, the irony about Mint was that it didn't actually really own any of its own software, right?
Right.
It was all built on a third-party platform.
It was a front end. They made
like
170 million. You know, it's a classic story. They made $170 million for a front end. And the company, was it Yodlee that makes the back end? They got squat. They got a new customer. It's not unusual. I mean, front end is everything.
So it's all window dressing.
That's what I think I have to think, and I think Ray Ozzie is some part of this strategy as well, because, of course, he's very cloud-focused. I think Microsoft is repositioning itself and really believes that desktop software has no future, that it's all got to be
online. I think that's faulty thinking.
Do you
desktop
think
software
Do you think that's faulty thinking on my part or Microsoft's part? Do you think that this is what Microsoft's thinking?
I know I agree with everything you say. I'm just saying I think it's faulty thinking that to think that desktop software is dead, is over.
I don't know. I think maybe the computer is dead, to be honest with you. The computer as we know it. You don't like that, huh?
Leo, I think you're onto something with this idea, and I wanted to mention it to go back and beat the Windows 7 horse, because if we're moving to the cloud with our software, we're putting our data up there, we're using it from any computer, the net is now the computer.
Yes.
What do you need a new OS for?
You don't. You just need a good browser.
Yeah, wait until the net goes down and tell me what you think after that happens.
Oh, we'll go get some fresh air. It'll be a good thing. It won't be down long. What do you think, it's going to be down for more than a minute?
You don't think it could be just taken down?
Like for how long? A day? A year?
A month.
This is Adam Curry again.
Yeah.
Month.
A month would be, look, even as we stand now with a reliance on desktop software, the net goes down for a month. It's terrible news. I don't think it's any worse than if you're all cloud-based. It's bad news in general.
Not if you're Stephen King.
What's his deal?
Typing away for a month.
Has he got a typewriter?
Well, I mean, on this keyboard. He probably does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nobody's saying you have no way of typing.
I have. Let's look at some of this cloud stuff. I have a lot of photos. They're huge. The file sizes are monstrous because everything I save is in RAW. So I have a bunch of ways of organizing these photos. And if I do it on the cloud, I'll be sitting here forever either trying to access these things or uploading them or doing all this other nonsense that's much better done locally. And this is the same thing for, like I look at the PayPal account that I've got. And I want to go from page to page to page. It's like, it takes forever. Just to refresh the page, and this is on a 10 megabit connection. I mean, come on. I mean, there's plenty of things that should be locally done. I mean, this cloud thing is overrated.
I gotta play you this video.
And by the way, Larry Ellison agrees with me.
I gotta play you this video. Larry Ellison hates cloud computing. Via Dvorak Uncensored, I might add. And it won't play, John. The cloud is dead. What's
there you
wrong?
Have it. There you go.
Cloud. Never base your podcast on a cloud. Now, I'll tell you why you're wrong, John. I'll tell you exactly why you're wrong. Because you're gonna die, and your poor kids are going to have 8 million tons of raw photos that they're just going to delete the data. They're going to delete the data. If they were in Picasa, at least online in a photo album, somebody might look at it someday. You're creating a data dump for nobody.
And I've used these. It's for me. I don't care about my kids having access to my
old
photos.
Are you going to look at those pictures?
Oh, please.
You're never going to look at it.
This cloud thing is a cornball idea. Larry Ellison is dead right.
Let me play. Unfortunately, the audio is not great on the Larry Ellison thing, but let me play it anyway, and you can kind of try to make it out.
I assume.
It's better than screw the arrow.
I don't know if we can understand.
My objection to cloud computing is the fact that cloud computing is not only the future of computing. It is the present. And the entire past of computing is all cloud. I mean, Salesforce.com has been around for more than a decade, and so has NetSuite. You know, NetSuite's been around longer than Salesforce, and it's people are saying, well, that's cloud computing. Google's now cloud computing. Everyone's cloud computing. My objection to cloud computing was everyone simply looks around, I've always been doing cloud computing. You know, it's like 10 years ago, like the cloud computing with the terms like 4 years old. Yeah, everything.
That's not an objection. He's just saying it's meaningless. He's saying the term is kind of meaningless.
He doesn't like the term. Now, people should listen to that whole thing, though, anyway. But if what he says is true, in other words, it's always been cloud computing because as long as there's been a net, then why should anything change insofar as the paradigm of computing? In other words, why should we stop using packages for the desktop when they still function very well?
Well, all right, maybe they function well, but I think Microsoft
money... And they're more efficient.
Let's use money. the idea of money sitting on your desktop kind of ignores the fact that all the data that money's chewing on is out there. Why does money need to be on your desktop? Why not just have a personal website that's secure and safe? Of course, that might be a question mark.
But there you go.
Let's assume it's secure and safe.
I mean, big assumption.
You can't. Well, but nothing's secure and safe even on your desktop. But I think you can make it as secure as your desktop. Let's put it that way. Maybe more secure considering how people treat their desktops. And it's always updated. It's always available. Most importantly, you've got a dashboard. I've got the Mint dashboard on my iPhone. I can see exactly what's going on with my money here. I could see it on any computer. Because it's cloud computing, it's not tied to a machine. Why should people don't back up? They're not always sitting at their computer. Less and less so, in fact. I think more and more we want to have this stuff wherever we are. We don't want it tied to a single CPU. That's kind of an old-fashioned idea.
I'm with John. I wouldn't put my photos online. They're sitting here on an
really?
External hard drive. Absolutely. And I would never... I did not go in and try Mint. I tried Mint. I looked at it. But I did not go with Mint, no matter how easy it might be and accessible it makes everything, because I'm concerned about the security.
Well, I resisted it, too. I understand that completely. And I did resist it for a year. And I'm kicking myself now because I went to it in August. Once you understand that the back end is the same back end your bank is using, what's the risk? I mean, your bank already has this. Yodlee knows everything about you anyway. Right?
Yeah, no.
If you sign up, yeah.
This argument is is not arguable. The Leo argument that we're hearing right now, because the fact of the matter, it reminds me. Let me give you the anecdote that I'm always reminded of, which is the people that are fearful of putting their orders online for mail
right.
order,
right?
Because the fact of the
but
matter,
but you'll give
is
your credit card to a waiter who wanders off.
No, actually, that's the real irony is beyond that. It's that fact of the matter is. Because I've done direct marketing, is that nowadays, if you want to set up a direct marketing 800 number, they bring up that exact same website because they won't take your order and they won't
right.
do the ordering for you unless you have a website that takes the orders over the internet.
Right.
And they just type in what the person
and
was.
It's probably a prisoner typing it in. Seriously. I was using for a long time. I used an online bill pay service and all my bills are scanned as in this mysterious place in South Dakota. Everything went to South Dakota until I couldn't figure out why South Dakota until I realized there was a federal penitentiary there. They're paying prisoners 10 cents an hour to scan
okay,
my
now,
bills in.
So now my concern again, let's get back to the actual topic at hand, is not so much about the cloud versus the non-cloud versus the security. It's the efficiency. It sucks. It's absolutely stinks. Like I said, I go to PayPal. It takes forever to refresh a page. I got a fast connection. I'm doing some online writing or something. It doesn't have half the power of Microsoft Word. It's just too sluggish. I don't like it. I don't like uploading photos to these crazy websites. It takes forever. You know, and then you have to do this, and then they fail to recognize the photo. Or I mean... You know, it's ridiculous.
I understand they're bringing out a PS3 Slim. Who needs it? I understand they're going to bring out a small Wii. And it's going to be called the Wii Wii.
Yeah, it's the Tech Crouch. I'm sorry, John. I had to do that to you.
I should have never mentioned the Tech Crouch. I'm going to have to live with this guy.
All right, so, Will, you're the guy under 30 here. What do you think?
Well, I have to say, the thing about cloud computing for me is, you know, you mentioned sort of having, you know, your photos on the web and don't necessarily trust your photos on the web and how, you know, you don't want to get them up there. For me, like, I would have to say that photos are almost pointless if they're not on the web.
That's what I think. Who's looking at them? Who's looking at them? Your kids aren't looking at them.
But you don't have to keep them there. You can have them both places.
I shoot 8 gigabytes a week, generally. Of photos. I'm not going to be uploading that much. It takes too long.
I upload every photo I care about. But you should, first of all, you shouldn't be saving 8 gigabytes. Yeah. So I pick the photos I want to save. I upload them to SmugMug and Flickr. They're there. They're protected. They're safe. They're online. If somebody wants them, they can see them. I can link to them. I share them with the world. I think that's a good model.
But you still got them on Earth, right?
Yeah, but I mean, erase
them, Leo. Erase them. You don't need them on Earth. Just erase everything you got and leave it up in the cloud. Right. And then when your account is canceled because somebody doesn't like
well,
the way you look,
Flickr and
you can complain about it later.
That's why I do Flickr and SmugMug. And you're right. You should save a copy. But come on, let's face it. How many people have a shoebox full of photos that, I mean, my wife has, we've moved 4 times with 400 pounds of photos no one will ever look at. No one will ever look at those.
Scan them in and upload them, Leo.
Absolutely. Look at them once, and there are services that Scott Bourne talked about.
There you go.
I just had that. Some guys in India took a look at.
You're proving my point. You're proving my point. That's the best way to deal with them. You've got, John, an 8 gigabyte a week shoebox that just happens to be a hard drive.
If I want to look at it, I can plow through them like there's no tomorrow. It's very difficult to do when they're online.
That's
it's too slow.
That's true. No, you're right. I use Lightroom on the drive to scan them, to look at them and see which I want. So that's a good point. All right, let's take a break. This is so much fun. You guys are great. Now, Frank, it's Barnico.
Yeah.
I've been saying Barnico.
A lot of people do it. It's okay.
Frank,
Last time I checked, the 49ers were up 35-0.
What? See, that's what happens when Brett Favre doesn't play for every team in the NFL. I'm sorry. I apologize, Will, in advance. How's the cricket going?
Nah. Forget it.
Ask me how the Redskins are going.
How are the Skins? Nah. No, we're the Niners. Lost their first game last week, but just by a little bit. And I guess they're doing okay this week. Kevin Rose was on the show and actually announced the score. So this is 2 weeks running. I'm personally of the opinion that people who listen to this show probably are not big football fans. In fact, probably don't even get out much.
Huh?
You think? It's just a theory. I could be wrong.
Don't get out much.
I'm the Tech Grouch. I love this character, dude. This is such a great character.
Beatles, Rock Band. Who the heck needs this crap? Yeah.
It's you. It's finally. You finally found your métier.
I found myself.
You did. Now you've got something. This is going to go viral. I want to talk about something else that really I think is when I found audible.com, my life changed. I know you agree with me, Will. This is audiobooks are just fantastic. Audible.com is the one and only the place to go to get your audiobooks. AUDIBLE.com. They have 60,000 at last count, 60,000 books on here. Every category from business to fiction to nonfiction. I always feel like my life is moving so fast. I just don't get enough time to read, and Audible solves that for me. I really want to recommend the website because it's a great place to go to browse. You know, people often moan the loss of the bookstore, and I certainly love browsing bookstores, but Audible's just like a bookstore. It's kind of like an online bookstore where you go and you browse and you look. You say, that sounds interesting. In some ways, it's even better because you can listen to a sample of the book. Here's Raymond Chandler's The Big Sleep. What a classic that is. I didn't even know that they had an audio. Elliot Gould narrates this. See, that's so cool. I'm going to make this my Audible pick, and I didn't even know about this. I'm looking for books to listen to. I've got a 15-hour flight coming up. Many, many Audible books are classics. This is Unabridged. Raymond Chandler's first novel from 1939 introduces Philip Marlowe to the world. It was that great Humphrey Bogart, Lauren Bacall movie. It was kind of an inscrutable movie, I guess, because who wrote it? Faulkner, I think, wrote the screenplay for it. Nobody could figure it out. But it's just a classic. This is it. This is my book pick of the week. But you see how quickly you just browse through there and you find great stuff? Now, let me tell you, you can get two books absolutely free right now by going to audible.com/twit2. Sign up for that Platinum account, and the first two books are free.
I grunted.
Elliot Gould, what's reading The Big Sleep.
Riley, I said. Doghouse Riley. That's a funny name. She bit her lip and turned her head a little and looked at me along her eyes. Then she lowered her lashes until they almost cuddled her cheeks and slowly raised them again like a theater curtain. I was to get to know that trick. That was supposed to make me roll over on my back with all four paws in the air. Are you a prize fighter? She asked.
I can just see Lauren Bacall from that scene. That's a great scene from the movie. Raymond Chandler's The Big Sleep. And another book. You pick it. Absolutely free. Go to audible.com/twit2. We love Audible. We know you will. You can play it back on almost any device, your Kindle, your Zune, your iPod, your iPhone, even a lot of GPS devices. Go to the device center right there on the Audible front page. You can see a list of all the devices and all the manufacturers. Figure it out if it works on your MP3 player. I'm sure it does. Start downloading books today from Audible. Your first two free at audible.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. You still reading audiobooks, Audible books, Will?
Yeah, I have to say my I've really been enjoying recently. I've got into a little bit of a Tolkien kick.
Oh, how fun.
Because there's been a couple of new Tolkien books released over here. But Audible has a fantastic, a few of sort of Tolkien's lesser known works. Farmer Giles of Ham, Rover Random,
you know what?
Smith
They're
of
only,
Wood Major.
Only in Audible Britain, I think. Audible UK.
No, I'm looking at it on the Audible US site. Seven, because they're in dollars.
Oh, good, because we looked for The Lord of the Rings, and you could get it, but we couldn't.
Yeah, so they've got some really good ones. So Farmer Giles of Ham, Rover Random, narrated by Derek Jacobi, who's a fantastic kind of Shakespearean you know, British actor. And they're really, really, really fantastic, slightly you know, less read Tolkien books, but they're equally as good.
Are they good?
Yeah, very, very good.
That's cool. I'm going to have to try those. I'm a big fan of Quark. And they're making the movie The Hobbit.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to see how that turns out.
Is Jackson doing? Peter Jackson's not directing that though. The guy who did the other Lord of the Rings.
He's producing it, but it's being directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, that's right. We talked about that the last time you were on, didn't we? Yeah.
I'm such a talking geek. It's sad.
Apple announces that there are 85,500 iPhone apps. 2 billion downloads. It's just remarkable.
What is it? And 85,400 of them are tip calculators.
Hey, but you got your choice. You got your choice.
And flashlights.
Palm has decided, I guess, to stop the shooting war with Apple. Palm Pre, remember, would sync with iTunes, and Apple keeps updating iTunes, so it doesn't work. So Palm kept offering firmware. Finally, they've given up, and they say, screw it. They're going to let you download from Amazon anyway. You know what?
Oh, hey, but no, the exact opposite, because yesterday there was a new firmware release for the Pre, which re-enabled syncing in
iTunes.
Oh,
man, I thought it was over.
Oh, no.
Depends when you read this. Depends.
It's back.
That's hysterical.
It's back.
So now you get both. You get iTunes and Amazon's MP3 store.
So, I've never used the Amazon services. What's the difference?
Well, you know, the thing about iTunes is, you know, it's kind of encapsulated, and but I don't think iTunes is that good looking or easy to use.
I agree. I think it's difficult to use. It takes forever. And every time, if I don't use it a lot, you forget, you know, this screwy. It's got a lot of
screwy.
It's weird. Screwy.
It's like a lot of programs that are older and have accreted a lot of silly UI cruft. And so as a result, just, you know, no longer makes sense except to the people who have been there all along watching the cruft accumulate. So you go to Amazon.com and, you can't search at the beginning because you'll get CDs as well as MP3s. You just go to the MP3 download section. And I think, you know, I know a lot of iTunes fans who said, oh, this isn't as easy to use. I think it's easier there. You know, when iTunes was still copy protected, this wasn't. It's a great way to search. I was kind of.
Well, it's easier because it's the Amazon vernacular, right? Everyone knows how to use Amazon. And so it's just making that available through the same kind of channel.
But what about distribution of podcasts?
No, they don't do podcasts.
Pretty much owned by iTunes.
Yeah, they don't do podcasts. And then that's always been a sore spot for me. Not that I'm not glad that iTunes came along and made it easier to get podcasts, but it's still so many clicks. That's one of the reasons we started doing streaming video. So people just go to a website and they could see. And I'm not going to be here next week because I'm going to Dubai. But when we come back the week after, I'm going to Blog World. That'll be October 16th. And I'll talk then about a new platform we have for distributing our video. Because I just
so psyched for that, Leo. So psyched.
I did not want to just put it on iTunes because it's you know, I think we've plateaued. And so I thought we got to find a new way to make it easy. The whole thing is point of access. It has to be. You could sit down at your TV and do it. You know what? I've mentioned we're going to do a deal with MediaFly. They're going to put it on the Roku box, which is a great start. You don't have that in Britain, though. But do you have Yahoo TVs in the UK?
Oh, these are the ones that have the new kind of widget stuff integrated?
I think a lot of manufacturers are going to build this into their new TVs. This will also work on those TVs.
Oh, fantastic.
So the idea is that ultimately it should be no more difficult to watch a channel flip show or a Mevio show or a Twitch show on your TV than it is to watch NBC, CBS, or ABC. And once we get to that point, then I think podcasts can take off. I just don't think they can take off in the ghetto of the iTunes store. It just doesn't, it's
well, that's
hard.
That's what's kicking off over here with the new kind of BBC joint venture.
What's that? What's going on?
Which is they've got this project where they're basically, I went to a meeting with the guys running it a couple of weeks ago, where they're basically building the next generation. In Britain, the primary way of getting TV isn't cable, it's over the air. So it's terrestrial. And they're building the next gen terrestrial spec, but it's actually replacing terrestrial with IPTV. So they're basically creating an entirely British kind of local standard for IPTV, with the idea that it's as easy to build, you know, to get any third party content onto the TV as it is to get anything that's over traditional broadcast. And the model that they're using very explicitly is the iTunes App Store model, whereby so content providers like Channel Flip in the UK, or
you'll
Twitch,
buy an app that is Channel Flip.
You'll make an app. Yeah. You basically make the equivalent of an app that can be browsed on the TV with its own kind of UE within a certain kind
of. That's exactly what Mediafly's doing. That's the way it has to be. So there's going to be a Twit button on the Roku, or there'll be a Twit button on your Yahoo, or there'll be a Channel Flip button on your Yahoo. So that's interesting. The BBC's doing that as well. Now, one of our chatters says he's in Ireland and does have a Yahoo TV. So I guess those TVs are coming out worldwide. But that's Sony's making a TV that you plug your Ethernet into. I mean, I think that's really where we need to go. It has to be that easy, or people are just not. It's too much trouble to figure out.
I agree with you.
Thank you. What do you think about that Beatles rock band? It's crap. I hate it. Crap. No, what did you say? Who needs that?
Learn how to play learn the real guitar, not the fake guitar.
Yeah, that's I agree with you, Tech Grouch.
There you have it.
I think you're absolutely right. That fake guitar, that's crap.
And it's going to be called the Wee Wee. Beatles rock band, who the heck needs this crap?
Yeah.
We're going to do a few more of those next week.
I want you to do a ton of them. I guess it's not probably very hard, right? You could probably write that stuff in your sleep.
I just gripe about everything. What else is new? How hard can it be?
Yeah. You can. There's not a lot of effort that's gone into that, right?
Wait a minute. Now let's not diminish. You see, it's easy because John makes it look so easy, but John's had to live a lifetime of disappointment, frustration, and horror to get to the point where he could make this kind of a thing.
Yep. I may have missed it earlier in the show, but is the Tech Grouch a 30-second spot that's going to play on websites, or is it a feature on Mevio that where we're expected to come in like a podcast, check on it every day?
That's a good question.
We have no idea.
It's but good we'll stuff. Figure it out.
Eventually. Hey, you kids, go learn to play the guitar like I did.
Well, John, you said this is your future, didn't you?
It is, sadly enough.
This is what it's come down to.
And I don't
to.
Like adverbs. So, hey, I have a request, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, sir. Mr. Dvorak.
You know, I was thinking about this as I was editing a piece somebody did, had a bunch of pops in it. And of course, I use one of these major screens to prevent that a little bit. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool that, you know, the way they do a red eye on a photo thing?
Yes.
You know, you put a little circle around the eyeball, push the button, boom. So why can't you make an Audacity plugin that essentially highlights the pop area, and then it renormalizes the waveform so the pop goes away?
That's a great idea. I don't know.
I'm soliciting that from someone.
You know who might be able to do that for us? Our friend Doug Kay, who did the Levelator.
Yeah.
At IT Conversations. He might be able to do it with the Popolator.
The Popolator. That would be it.
We have, you know, if you use Audition, actually, and I think other programs do this too, there's, besides the wave view, there's this beautiful, Tony uses this. I don't know exactly how it works, but it's like a spectrogram view. And you can see stuff. It's different. And I think you could see pops and you just like paint over it. Like it's like a heel brush, just like on Photoshop, but it's an audio heel brush. It's really cool.
I mean, is on what?
Audition, which is the software we were using. Actually, we're abandoning it now. We're going to do Final Cut for all the audio and video editing as we move to video. Mm. So the RIAA, this is so sad. Jamie Thomas. Joel Tenenbaum, you know, they fought the RIAA, they fought the record industry. They ended up with hundreds of thousands of dollars in damages. Maybe they should have just ignored them. The Judge Nancy Gertner in the federal court in Massachusetts has issued 4 default judgments against people who were accused by the recording industry of peer-to-peer file sharing. They never bothered to answer the charges. So you'd think, well, hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines. Yeah, no, she gave them the minimum, $750 a song. A few $1,000. They walk. So the damages, if you go to jury, Jamie Thomas damages $80,000 a song. Joel Tenenbaum's damages $22,500 a song. Ignoring the lawsuit, $750.
Yeah, you're basically encouraging what's essentially racketeering.
Kind of. Is this justice? I don't know. I guess
it's racketeering is what it is. They should throw these people in jail
for filing these suits. The RIAA.
Well, I mean, it's just obviously let's file a suit here, file a suit right there. Just file them all over the place, whether you download it or not, and then you just give us the money, or you have to pay, you know, at least $40,000 to take it to court.
Yeah. Here's a surprise: 2/3 of Americans object to online tracking. Why do they even do a poll for that? And the number rises once they learn the different ways marketers are following their online movements. University of Pennsylvania and University of California, Berkeley professors doing a study of marketers and how people view marketing. They ask things like, please tell me whether or not you want websites you visit to give you discounts that are tailored to your interests. That's what Google and Facebook do, right? 66% said, no, we don't want tailored ads. See, this is wrong. They don't know they want tailored ads.
I think they know they don't want them.
Wouldn't you prefer, this was my contention earlier on in the show.
This is your contention.
Wouldn't you prefer if you go to a website that the ad, I guess the problem is they feel like they're being spied on, but if you could set aside the spying, wouldn't you rather see ads? I know we know this on TV. You'd rather see an ad for something you're interested in than for something you're not interested in. I don't care to see feminine hygiene spray ads on television because I just don't have that problem.
I don't like seeing ads.
At all.
Well, yeah. And the question, was that the question? Was it ads tailored to me or no ads? And I'll bet it was the former and not the latter.
It was.
And so I'd rather not see any ads at all, period.
Ah. Well,
but
sorry.
I would like to see ads tailored to me.
I mean, I understand. I don't want to see ads, but come on. I mean, you also, you know, I also want.
I don't care if it's tailored to me or not. I'm not going to pay any attention. I don't like ads.
Well, then what do we do to monetize? How do you monetize
money.
The tech? Beg for money. How do you monetize the tech grouch?
We're using a Squarespace thing that's tailor-made for the people who watch the tech grouch.
So they get a coupon code.
It's a targeted ad for people who are only interested in this sort of thing. I don't know. I mean, this is just like, you know, there's nothing else you can do.
You've seen ZZ Top, haven't you? Go to squarespace.com. Use the code word tech for a 12% discount.
You get a better discount than we do. We only get 10%. Oh, stop. Is there more?
This is a feature.
No, hey, it repeats.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, good.
It just plays over and over.
This is a feature in search of a business model.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Because I'm friends with the CEO.
Google. Oh, with Squarespace, you're friends?
Yeah.
I thought I was.
That's friends. A very nice little smug look. Yeah.
I thought I was.
That's friends. A bigger discount.
Hmm. All right. That's okay.
Actually, it comes out of my pocket. I actually give back to the community.
Oh, that's. I get it. The 2% comes from you. Hey, what was I going to say? Oh, Wave. Google Wave came out. We talked a lot about it. If you're really interested in this on the This Week in Google show, that's the Google Fanboy show. This is, I think, probably somewhat less than a Google Fanboy show.
You know, your show was that show was rated number one in some podcast nutball.
Nutball? It was number one on iTunes.
Well, besides that.
It's a very, very popular show. Why? Because Google is taking over the world and everybody wants to know when it's coming.
I have never heard this show. I'm going to have to listen to it now.
You know, it's Jeff Jarvis, who's great. It's Gina Trapani. And then we bring in a fourth. I'd love to have you on it anytime you want. And we bring in a fourth person who's an expert in some area. Yesterday it was Marshall Kirkpatrick from Read Write Web. And Kevin Marks of British Telecom, who's the guy who started, you know, created QuickTime and used to work at Google. So he's very Google Open Social. So he's very.
Are you marginalizing this show, the big show, the Twitch show?
Yeah, this show is dead.
Hmm.
It's history. You know, the last time
Google
I say
is
that.
Very, very deep.
No, I'm not marginalizing this show. Are you kidding? I'm just trying to expand so that I can be a multimillionaire. It's expensive. Servants. Do you know how much a good butler is expensive and hard to find? It's very expensive. A hubcap on a Bentley. You know how much that costs? It is not easy to live in Northern California. The pool boy raised the cost of, you know, he said.
Raul.
20% more, he says, because we have four pools. And I don't think that that's fair. I think it's by hour. It doesn't matter how many pools you have. The hourly rate should be the same. If it takes him, it doesn't make sense. Okay? I'm just saying.
I feel for you.
And have you seen the cost of jet fuel?
So what is this show Google about?
It's about Google. But let me ask you about Wave. What do you think? Now that we've all seen it, right?
No, I haven't seen
it. I never got my invite. I never got it running. I've never seen Wave.
Only you got an invite.
All right, I'm going to invite you guys. I'll send you invites. I have three left just in time for you. How about
Will, have you seen it? Yeah, but here's the thing, Leo. You can send out the invites, but they're not going out.
No, they're nominations. They're not invites. They're nominations.
Yeah, they're all just kind of stuck in some kind of big Google log jam. Because I've had, you know, I've had people who have sent me, you know, a few, and I haven't had any of them.
I know.
Leo, tell us all about it.
Yeah, what do you think of it? You've been inside.
I encourage you to check out our Twig show, because we did spend an hour talking about it. You know, Scoble said, what is this? You know, he finally got in. He said, this is like incomprehensible mishmash of stuff. It's like chat out of control. And I think your first reaction is, this is kind of crazy. But I am going to withhold judgment, because I think in time.
What's it supposed to be?
Well, I think they misrepresented it. The Rasmussen brothers, when they created it, said we want to rethink email. Email was invented, you know, 30 years ago. It's how people communicate is different. And I think that people thought, oh, this is going to be the next email. And it's not. It's really it's a collaborative tool. It doesn't even have a public face. It's a collaborative tool. So if we were, for instance, planning this show, which we've never done, but say we wanted to, we would get together in a Google Wave and we'd type up ideas, we'd paste in articles and video and so forth, and we could collaborate and make a permanent document that is a record of the collaboration, including all edits. It's kind of wiki-like. You can edit what I wrote. I can edit what you wrote. There's a playback, so you can go back to the beginning and walk through the changes. I think it's an interesting tool for that. I think what's going to make it or break it is what third-party developers do for it. It's got a real API. There are a number of bots and extensions and gadgets for it already, and I think that could really tell us what it could be. I think we don't know. Just as we didn't really know what Twitter was going to be until people got to it and started using it, and they really used it in ways that were different from what Twitter thought they would be. I think we will see Wave develop as its users use it. I think it's very innovative and very interesting. I think it has a lot of potential.
Yeah, sounds like something
is
for
it
the
different
tech
from
grouch.
Google Documents?
Yeah, it is. It's much more real time. And this is what it really is playing off of this real fervor for real time web, you know, where everything happens right now and is collaborative and is in the real time. And I guess that's the question is, you know, much as is cloud, this is, you know, is cloud computing new? No, we've been doing it. Real time is not new. I mean, we've been doing real time on radio and TV for years. Anything live is real time. But the web has not had that until recently. And now, thanks to more modern web technologies and Ajax and things like XMPP, it can be real time. And I think that is kind of an interesting use of the web. I'm excited about it. We do a lot of real time stuff here. I have chat rooms going while we're doing the show. We have a friend feed room that's going while we're doing the show. And I think it's very valuable. We've had 108 comments in our friend feed conversation as we've been talking. Johnny Worthington says Wave is inter-office email. That may be actually a more apt description of it, really.
I remember the day when inter-office email used to come in a big manila envelope.
Yes,
and there was
that.
A bunch of names on it. And when you wrote the name, you read it, and then you X'd your name off and sent it to the next person.
I bet you were a hoarder. Did you hoard those envelopes?
No, I didn't. Well, maybe.
I did. They
you
were
did?
Very useful. Oh, yeah, you could store stuff in them.
Well, they're handy envelopes, and it's also a good way to route stuff.
It is. And remember, they had air holes in them, so they were really good for storing small animals.
They did have air holes for some unknown reason.
Nobody understands why they had air holes.
So you can see, what's really good for keeping stuff now also?
Which?
FedEx envelopes.
Oh, yeah.
They're very, very sturdy.
They're tough.
Yeah.
The Tyvek.
Yeah, and they're free.
Are they Tyvek? They seem like they're Tyvek.
Yeah, they're Tyvek. They're very... Try tearing one.
Yeah, no, you can't.
I've sewn them into jackets, and so you can wear them.
It's not... that Tyvek is not the same thing as bulletproof material, right? That's something else.
That's Kevlar.
The Horax beard is made out of Tyvek.
Yeah, I think that beard is definitely nothing natural. Let's put it that way. It was never anybody's actual hair. John C. Dvorak is at channeldvorak.com, and check out his new Tech Grouch show, which I think we've plugged more than enough.
I didn't mean to even plug it at all.
I'm glad you did. It's great. You can catch him there, and we thank you so much for being here, John. And boy, that camera's looking good. For people who want to see John and his incredible sartorial excellence.
I got to dye my hair or something. I'm too blonde.
Where'd you get that? Yeah, you're too blonde, John. Where'd you get that shirt? That's just wild.
Taiwan.
Oh, it looks something like Carnival, left over from Rio.
I believe it or not, I bought this shirt about almost 20 years ago in Taipei. I've never worn it because I just saw the fabric. I said, that would make a great custom shirt. I bought it at the Lai Sheraton's tailor shop. And it's been in the closet forever. And every time I put it on and then think I'm going to go outside with it, I put it back.
No.
I can't wear it. It's impossible.
Mimi says, not with me. You're not wearing that shirt.
So I figured this is where
it's perfect for this show. And you know, when you look at it on Skypeosaurus, which is our special 4-screen Skype display, you just stand out. You pop. It really pops. It's fantastic. If you haven't seen the show, we do it live. And I think I could say safely, we perform it live every Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. And we'd love you to watch live and participate in the chat rooms of the Friend Feed Room at live.twit.tv. Live.twit.tv. And thank you, John, for being here. Frank, I really want to thank you for being here. We're going to have you on a lot more.
Thank you.
Frank, Barnico. I got it right.
Just call me Frank.
Frank. Frank is at Barnico.
Frankie B.
Frankie B is here. He's at Barnico.com. He has immense experience in this business, including USAtoday.com, CBS MarketWatch. He started the Internet Daily column for MarketWatch back in 1998, and we're going to have you back real soon. And of course, Will Harris is always welcome to darken our door anytime at channelflip.com. And anything else you want to plug? You've been doing a great job with Bobby Lou.
Twitter, Will Harris.
Oh yeah,
you like to
plug that
Twitter.
You'd like to plug that Twitter, don't you?
I do. It's just the you know, I'm an immensely vain person.
Really, that's all Twitter's good for, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like kind of flogging your personal brand.
Pretty much.
Do you have a brand?
But also makes a fantastic crowdsourcing resource.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. You know, it's really good. In fact, that's what John's always said. It's really good for asking a question and getting an answer. And he's going
to... How many days will you be on the ground in Dubai?
I'm going to be there. We fly out Tuesday, and that means we arrive Wednesday evening. So I'll be there Wednesday evening, Thursday, Friday. Saturday, I speak. The TEDx Dubai is at the Palladium in Dubai at the Media City on Saturday. It's a 15-hour flight each way for 18 minutes speech. Saturday and Sunday, I'm going to do the radio show from there, which is going to be a lot of fun. And then we fly back on Monday. So I got a good 5-6 days there. Have you been there, Frank?
I have not, but it is the one place I would like to go. We were talking about a wedding anniversary trip, and I suggested that, and my wife said no.
Oh!
But I hope you take a lot of photographs.
I'm gonna live blog photograph. I'm going to do the usual crazy media thing that I did last summer in China. And you know, the iPhone is really a great platform for kind of blogging a trip. You can just do the whole thing. And so I hope I don't have the same AT&T bill that I had from China, but I will do that. And I will fill you in, and maybe I can convince your wife it's worth going. My wife's very excited. We're going to take a water taxi to the souks and buy gold, I'm told.
You better go with the local.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I can't. I don't know how to. I don't have to do that stuff.
They'll rip you off. I mean, the gold thing is cool because they actually will sell you these elaborate gold chains, and they weigh it, and then they see what the current market price for gold is, and you buy it at that price.
plus 100% or no?
No markup.
So they, wow. Well, so then I don't have to haggle there.
No, but they're still, apparently they do say pull some tricks on you if you don't know what you're doing.
Like the old thumb on the scale trick.
Something like that.
Wow, that gold chain weighs 12 pounds.
There's an area in Dubai that every shop is a gold shop.
That's where I want to go, the gold suits.
It's blinding.
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah, go with a local.
No, we will. We actually, what's great is I'm being, Giorgio and the people there are just being great, and they're going to take us everywhere. We're going to go out in the desert. I want to shoot some, do some photography out in the dunes. I'm really looking forward to it. So I'll report
back. The entire town is the desert, but go ahead, you know, think what you want. Horrible.
Next week, we will still do a twit, but it will be Brian Brushwood and Molly Wood. We call it Schwood and Wood, and that will be at the same time. And I'm sure they'll have a blast. All the other shows will continue on with Alex Lindsay guest hosting for me, and I will be back, I guess, Tuesday for Mac Break Weekly. That's a week from Tuesday. But do follow my, I guess the best place to go probably would be follow my friend feed account, because that will pull in links from Facebook, from my blog, from my Twitter, from everywhere else that I post. That's friendfeed.com/Leo Laporte. Frank, are you on Twitter? You want to plug your Twitter account?
Frank Barnako is the Twitter account.
Easy enough. Barnako.
And the real Dvorak.
Of course. What else would it be? Well, it could be real Dvorak if you're David Pogue. Did he ever apologize to you?
Yeah, he sent me a note, but okay. He never, you know. He sent me a tweet.
He tweeted you. At least he tweeted the right account. David was complaining that John was ripping him on Twitter, and it turns out it wasn't John. It was somebody pretending to be John. Dune surfing. They say I can go dune surfing. That'll be fun. Hey, thanks, guys. Really appreciate your time. Thank you all for being here. East Meets West is coming up next. I'm Leo Laporte. Another twit.
This is amazing.
Is in the can.